Hello, and welcome to another episode of Visanto Explained. Today we are joined by Dr. Flavia Vanni to talk about the Byzantine stucco and her work in examining stucco techniques in Greece, Italy and Turkey. Dr. Vanni held a fellowship at the Barton Oaks and currently she is a postdoctoral student at the British School of Athens, holding the Richard Bradford McConnell Studentship. Dr. Vanni is also a member at the Art Story, a group of art history experts who produce online courses and webinars about European, American and Asian art. Dr. Flavia Vanni, αγαπητή Φλάβια, καλώς ήρθες στο podcast. Σε ευχαριστούμε πάρα πολύ που αποδέχτηκες την πρόσκλησή μας.
Γεια σου Γιάννης και Πάνος, ευχαριστούμε πολύ.
Πες μας λίγα λόγια για τον εαυτό σου για να σε γνωρίσει το κοινό μας.
Ναι, είμαι από τη Ρώμη, στην Ιταλία. Σπούδασα στο Πανεπιστήμιο La Sapienza, ιστορία της τέχνης από το Μεσαίωνα έως τη σύγχρονο περίοδο. Αλλά μετά σπούδασα πιο καλά της τέχνης και αρχαιολογική του Μεσαίωνα και το Βυζαντινή περίοδο. Σπούδασα ένα μεταπτυχιακό στη Βυζαντινή και μετεωνική τέχνη. Αλλά μετά πήγα στην Αγγλία, στο Μπέρμιγχαμ και πήρασα ένα μάστερ στις Βυζαντινές σπουδές. Και μετά πήρα το διαδοκτορικό μου στην Μπέρμιγχαμ.
Πάρα πολύ ωραία. And now we are going to switch in English, since our conversation is going to be in English. And Flavia, you work on stucco, and this is actually what our episode is gonna be about. So I would like first I would like to ask you how and or why did you decide to work on stucco, and apart from that I would like to ask you what skills did you need to have in order to start working on stucco.
Thank you Giannis for this question and for this conversation in general. I'm very happy to be here. I decided to work on stucco back in my master days in Rome, and I remember very well the day in which I proposed the topic to my supervisor, who was at the time Alessandra Guiglia, very well-known expert in Byzantine sculpture and Byzantine art and architecture in general. And I was actually focusing more on the stuccos in southern Italy, made around the first Norman period. And but they were already a bit studied. So when I proposed at the top, I say, oh, I'm interested in this. She said, well, actually, yes, we know about this, but we don't have a grasp of what is happening almost at the same time in the territories under the direct control of the Byzantine Empire, so mainly Greece and Turkey, even if everyone assumes that it was there. So it's like, do you have time? Do you want to accept this challenge? It was like a sort of a challenge, and I like challenges. So I started to make some research, and the material came up. Not a lot at the beginning, but then it became a bulk of material that was impossible to finish in one master thesis. So then I continued with my work in Birmingham. Basically, I expanded on the written sources, and then I did my PhD because the material keep calm and calm. And new questions were rising, basically. What skills does one need in order to study this material? One thing is be perseverant, so never give up, because when you start, I think it's general, when you start something new, that's an overlooked topic, there are some reasons either there's nothing or it's very difficult to find information. So you need some patience. Being patient and just search and search in different languages, in different type of sources. And another skill specifically for Stacco, it's, I guess, a good, decent knowledge of Byzantine culture in general, and but also technical processes in making works of art, what we call today works of art. So what are the tools and the processes for carving a sculpture, a marble sculpture? What about something for a wooden sculpture? And what does it take also to make a wall painting? And the reason is because it's a technique that by our contemporary society, it is considered as hybrid. So something in between sculpture and painting. Probably that was not the case for Byzantine people, but that's another story. But this means that we don't have sometimes all the tools to understand all these processes that were took for granted by them.
So just for our Greek audience to understand, what's the topic and what is the stacco, gypsina, στα ελληνικά? Can you tell us some information, basic information, about what is stacco?
Okay, so stacco is a very weird word, and it starts as an Italian word, but it acquires different meaning depending on the cultural context. So generally, under the umbrella of stacco, you have every plaster relief. So in Greek is gypsina, so it's very connected to the word gypsum. But actually you can have a stacco made mainly by gypsum or by other ingredients. What are the ingredients? So basically you pour together some basic ingredients, which are lime or gypsum or a combination of two, plus sand, water, and any other kind of material that help make the mixture stronger. So in some cultures, in some cases you have straw, in other cases you have crushed tiles. It depends of what you have to do with this plaster. However, there are also other school of thoughts and which use the word plaster for mixtures and relief made mainly with gypsum powder and no lime at all, and use lime-based mixtures, and they call it stacco. So stacco, lime, plaster, gypsum. I use the word stacco in the Italian sense that we use among art historians, just to indicate a relief made of a mixture, because sometimes, especially for Byzantine one, we don't know if they were mainly based on gypsum or on lime. So this distinction can work for some specific areas or some historical periods, but for Byzantium it doesn't. And that's why I'm using this vague umbrella of stacco.
Yeah, so we talk about different practices, stacco practices, or difference about the mixture. Can you tell us something about reconstructing the Byzantine stacco, and what are the challenges of doing so?
Yeah. You mean reconstructing the practices behind it?
Yes.
Okay, how it was made?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Okay. It's very challenging because we don't have almost any written account on what were the ingredients. Nor we have chemical analysis on how they are. Yes, we have those of the plaster of wall paintings. So sometimes we can take for granted that they were the same if this stratigraphy allows you. But for other cases, for fragments that are now out of context, it's impossible to know. So the starting point is that basically we don't know enough. In my PhD thesis, I've started to create a framework and put as many information as we have for now. But it's very difficult to talk about specific Byzantine practices. There are, so in terms of chemical composition, there is the excellent job made by the Ephoret of Arta for a group of staccos of 13th century Epiros. And they did some petrographical analysis and they found out that the stucco, the plaster, it's made of almost pure gypsum quarried locally. For others, it's not always possible to do this kind of petrographical analysis because they're very invasive. So for smaller decorations, it is only possible to do surface analysis, and this is what I'm starting to do with a project for some Byzantine monuments in Greece.
So regarding the social aspect of the study of stucco in churches in Italy and Greece, and given the example of Paganus we read about in your quite recent article of yours in Global Byzantium, we are going to leave some bibliography in the comments. This example of Paganus was in the Church of Civitale in Italy. How often do you come across names of patrons while examining stuccos? So we have seen similar works of Sofia Kalopisi Verti in her big volume about the inscriptions, where we see information about donors and patrons. We know that Dora Costantello is doing something similar right now with inscriptions on paintings in churches. So what's your experience for that?
Okay, finding direct names on the surface of the stucco is almost impossible. At least in my experience, I've never found any name on stucco, at least carved. Very, very often, especially templa made of stucco were probably also painted. So we can't exclude that if there was a name or a monogram or something like that, it could have been written in painting and now it's lost. So I would not exclude that. In terms of how is it possible to gain information about patrons thanks to stucco, it is possible. And it is possible, especially when also we have some complementary information, such as the written sources. So for example, there are the stucco that decorates the tomb in the narthex, in the Liti, of the Catholicon of the Viron monastery on Mount Athos. They can be linked with a passage in the life of George the Argurid. We know that they were dedicated to the tombs of some specific egumeni. And can also then be connected to probably one or two egumeni who sponsored their construction, so in terms of indirect. However, I have to say that the example of Paganus that we see in the Church of Cividale, the so-called Tempietto Longobardo, so the Longobard temple, small temple, basically, Paganus, yes, might be the patron, but it is also more likely to be the head of the workshop who made those stuccos and perhaps the wall paintings. So the identity of Paganus is a bit tricky, and this is because Paganus, because the church was part of the Longobard palace in Cividale, and Paganus is not the name of the Longobard king. Yes.
So regarding the identity of pagans, and you mentioned the workshops. Can you talk about more about workshops by examining their work?
Yeah. It is regarding Paganus. Sorry, I'll add the last part. There is also a lot of debate whether Paganus is a real name or just someone who doesn't believe in God, because it can have a lot of meanings. But in terms of how we can identify workshops, I would say that the case from Epiros and in general also experience from, for example, the Staccos in southern Italy can help. So one, I think there, it is important to find a combination of several aspects. One is to check when we can, the chemical composition of the mixture. So if they use the same material quarried from the same sources and they have been used in similar and comparable percentages, because this means that the same people, they were passing the recipe from one to the other, and they were doing things in this way. The other way then is something like checking the decorative motifs that they used and the stamps that they use and how they carved. And this is something connected to also what we might call the so-called style of the pieces, because maybe they have the same stamps that you can recognize. You can recognize the matrix of the stamp that is the same in one I don't know, sculpture, and then another, and you see that they are using almost the same tools. And then, of course, if we have an inscription, but this is not the this is not the case so far, but for example, for workshops of sculptures, we know some of them are very well known, like those in the Mani Peninsula, because they signed their own pieces. You can find them in different churches. A similar case is also in Abruzzo in Italy, on the Adriatic shore. And we have the workshop of Roberto and Nicodemo. And we know about them because they signed their pieces and they even date some of them. So,
as we can understand, there are many techniques and workshops around the at least Mediterranean. And can we find some key differences about the techniques they used? And in fact, in your article, you refer to Lombard or Islamic technique of stucco. Can we find some key differences about these?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, yes, we can find some key differences. The differences, though, are more nuanced. And because at the time, I mean, the historical moment that the article talks about is the 8th century. And during the 8th century, still the Mediterranean was very, very, very well connected in cultural terms too, because those areas were all under the Roman and then later Byzantine Empire. The Umayyad conquest was still kind of recently in terms of material culture. So there were some common grounds, and the Roman tradition in making stucco was also very strong and present in the entire Mediterranean. However, there was also the Sasanian tradition. So many, some scholars have argued and trying to spot the Sasanian tradition into the Umayyad stucco making. You can see a continuity, but you can see also some changes. So in the article, I try to understand if we can divide clearly, make a cut sharp between Lombard, Byzantine, and Umayyad. It is almost impossible in the sense that it is not, I believe that it is the use of simply iconographic details and style can work up to a certain point because they can be easily moved between one short to the other. However, what we can use is something that has been overlooked so far, and it is how the staccos were attached to the wall. Because no matter what the ingredients they were using the plaster, the way in which people work and plan their work, it should reflect their own education. So in those of the Umayyad one, at least Kirbat al-Mafjar and later Salman Pak, they are attached to the wall thanks to a sort of mats made of interlaced reeds. And then and this allow you to attach a specific type of plaster and to carve the, and usually stamp it. While for the Byzantine and the Lombard, which probably were connected to the old Roman tradition, more similar to the Byzantine one, they are attached to bunches of reeds. So, which is a completely different thing, because it allows you to create a very huge relief. Not that the Umayyad were not doing it, but they were doing it using different tools. And I think that's what matters for that specific case.
Great, thank you, Flavia. In this comparative analysis of Lombard, Byzantine and Umayyad staccos, you use Agia Sophia and Osios Lukas in Boeotia as your main and most indicative examples of Byzantine stucco. I think it's really interesting that in both churches, the involvement of Constantinopolitan craftsmen to your eyes, which are more experienced, is obvious. So, what characteristics of Byzantine stucco practices would you say that are indicative of Constantinopolitan craftsmanship?
Okay, I'm not sure that at this stage we can always distinguish between Constantinople and outside Constantinople in terms of stucco. The cases I use for the comparative analysis are the most well-known. So they're useful because we have more information about them, because we know roughly their chemical composition, we know how they're attached to the wall, and we can see how they are worked, so with stamps or knives and sticks, etc. So they can give us all those indicators that can allow us to evaluate how a technique works. I believe that in order to distinguish between Constantinopolitan practices and then, I don't know, regional practices, we need more analysis in terms of the chemical composition. So I'm afraid that I cannot answer you fully, but I think it's that's the most honest thing to say.
And that's the point. Thank you.
So we talked about the interaction between workshops, at least in 8th century, because of the Mediterranean. And you said about the difference between the mixes of stucco. Does it have any environmental factors that that it depends in the materials of the mixture?
Yes, we need to take into account both environmental factors and both local traditions, and imported tradition too, because gypsum generally it's more ready available in the Mediterranean. And it is even easy to prepare for mixtures than lime because it can be fired So it can become powder and can be cooked, let's say, at lower temperature compared to lime. So it is easily to find, easily to prepare. And but the only thing is, when you create a mixture with gypsum, you will have a mixture which is fine for interior decoration, but not for exterior, because it's very sensible to water. Probably because of that, the Romans, so we need to do a step back, imported in most of the territories they conquered, the lime-based stucco, which was also used, for example, in thermal baths. And this change in technology, it's clear. And it's also clear that when this domination finishes, generally local tradition tends to come back to gypsum-based mixtures. And this is the case, for example, of Palestine. There are some excavation that clearly noted the different phases of the same building. And before the Roman, it was gypsum. Then with the Roman, it's lime. And after that, it's gypsum again. So both things are to be considered. In terms of also materials and why stucco was used, for example, in a specific church or in a specific buildings, we need also to take into account the geographical location. Because while for making a sculpture with marble or stone, you need to have the big piece of stone and bring it up to the place, unless you have the quarry nearby. With stucco, you can create something as durable as limestone, at least, but you can split your cargo into infinite packages. And you can bring, for example, the material for a templon up to very remote areas in a more flexible way. Even though this doesn't mean that it's the cheapest option.
That's very interesting, indeed. And thank you for that. So I can't ask you now about your experience in Ossos Loukas. I know it's not fully published yet, so I don't know, you can't say much, but you had the chance to examine the stuccos of the Church of Ossos Loukas in Bioshe. And you actually took samples of the artifacts you examined from the church, and I think from some archives as well, which you examined in a lab. This is not something that we see very often in our studies, and I think your experience here is going to be valuable for our listeners. So, if you can tell us a few things about the purpose of your research and probably the methods that you use.
Yes, the project about Ossos Loukas is something I'm really, really excited about, and it's something that I'm loving it. So, for Ossos Loukas, the analysis were possible first thanks to the permits and the collaboration of the Euphoria of Idea and the Ministry for Conservation, who granted us the authorization to sample the pieces, and also to the lab who is responsible for the analysis, because I'm unfortunately not a lab person, but that's how collaboration came up and starts. So I'm collaborating with Ormilia Lab and Arts Diagnosis, which is located in Ormilia near Thessaloniki. And their staff is responsible for the lab analysis. So together with them and with the Euphoria, we decided that we wanted to understand a bit more about the chemical composition of the stuccos of Ossos Loukas. However, since all the pieces are in situ, so in the church, they can't be sampled because they're part of the monument. And the pieces that are now in the archaeological collection of the same monastery, so today the trapeza, the trapeza, they could be sampled. And we did some non-destructive analysis. So the pieces, the sample that we took, will be reattached to the pieces in situ. What we did? We did three types of analysis, which combined together can give us an idea. They are XRF analysis and FTIR analysis, which are made to understand the general composition of the surface of the pieces. So if we have mainly lime or gypsum, if we have any organic material, if we have any other kind of material. And then we also did some micro-Raman analysis, which can help you spot, again, other organic material, but also traces of colors. So if there were paintings, these pieces or not. I mean, as surface analysis, yes, they have some limits because they will not go into the core. But the samples that we took were also from the middle, using some cracks that were already there. So this is following also the advices of the restorer and the Euphoria. So hopefully soon we will be able to publish the results and have a bit more understanding of what is Byzantine stucco and how can we recognize it and start to draw the dots of a pattern. All the analysis were possible thanks to the support of the Mary Jahari Center for Byzantine Art and Culture.
And we really look forward to reading the results. So Flavia, we know that from next month, from February, you're going to be in Athens at the British School of Athens, working at on a new project. And can you tell us a few words about it?
Yes, I will be at the British School of Athens and I'll work on a project about illumination of buildings, but from a specific perspective. So the project is called Sculpting Light in Byzantine Greece. And I will start to study the window frames of middle and late Byzantine buildings from on Greek territory, because this is something that hasn't been really, it has been studied, but not super in depth and not for a broad range, geographical range. So window frame can be made of different material. So from wood to marble to stone, but also stucco. That's how I started to be interested in it. And sometimes they do not filter as much light as we would, or we would expect. And the question is why, if you have a pretty big window, why don't you use it? Why you just hide the entire part and just leave one small circle open? And so I'm looking, I will look into that and check both practical aspect like insulation because of hot weather, so it can help keeping people fresh inside, but also the idea of manipulating light in some ways. And also the idea of having a nice window frame, heavily decorated, that can be seen from the exterior and be part of the external facade of buildings. Because, yeah, in the Middle Byzantine period and the Late Byzantine period, we had many sculptures on external facades. And I believe that when the high decoration of window was part of it.
Thank you very much, Flavia. Thank you for your time, for accepting our invitation to come to our podcast, and also for giving, for telling us actually your experience from working with stucco. Not many people actually work on Byzantine stucco, and I think it's very interesting because today we are talking about something that our listeners, and most of them are students, probably are gonna learn, and probably they're gonna, you know, look for more information about it, and hopefully one day we have more people working on stucco and architecture. Thank you so much, and I really hope we have another episode about the results now of the examination of Osius Lucas.
Thank yeah, I would love to, honestly, especially because I think stucco, it is a diagnostic material, as every material it is, but it can also help us understanding better, for example, the faces of some monuments. And once we collect also information about their composition, can probably tell us about transfer of techniques a little bit better. And it is a material worthy to be studied because it gives information. And so, for example, for some monuments that I've studied, like Vatopedi and Iviron, the study of the stucco pieces can help you tell an extra phase of the building, another intervention that can help, fits with the history of the monastery, can tell you a bit more of what was the strategy. So it is something that needs to be taken care of and studied even by more students because there's need for it.
Thank you so much.
Ευχαριστούμε το Ιστολόγιο Ανασκαφή για την αναδημοσίευση των επεισοδίων μας.